Oh my goodness. All right. Here we go. Do we do Welcome It's Del Toro?
Yes.
Okay. I can never remember what we're supposed to do in the intro. Hey everyone, I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. How you
yes,
doing?
Yes, it is.
How do you feel about Guillermo del Toro's big win?
Happy.
Very happy. Now, for those of you who are wondering what big win we're talking about, he won for
Golden Globes.
He won for the Golden Globes. He won Best Director at the Golden Globes weeks ago by the time this comes out. This is our first chance to talk about it here on the show. Big award. Big award for
he deserves it.
For a big man. Like a big, like, creative man. I mean, he's a big man, but I mean, he's also like
stop
super
talking.
Great. Okay. So we're very proud. We're very proud. I'm very proud of not just Guillermo del Toro, but also like that a genre film got such a high award. That's not nothing. Speaking of filmmakers and filmmaking, we are back with the Ecstasy of Influence, looking at this week 1941's.
Sullivan's Travels.
Now, in our last episode, I mentioned the title, and you got all wigged out.
It sounds so boring.
Serious question. What sounds boring about Sullivan's Travels?
The fact that if you call a movie Someone's Travels, it just sounds like you're going to be following them around on some boring-ass road trip.
What if it was Darth Vader's Travels?
That would still be boring.
Okay, so since you know so little, since you know nothing about this movie, I'm going to feed you just a little bit of information, just so you can sort of like formulate maybe an idea in your head and maybe get a little bit of an idea of why Guillermo del Toro may have put this on his list. So Sullivan's Travels is about a film director who's been working in the Hollywood system and is getting tired of making typical Hollywood populist fare and wants to make a serious movie about the human condition.
I wonder why Del Toro likes this movie.
There's your idea. It's made by a filmmaker named Preston Sturges, who is renowned for his comedies. So it's a satirical take.
Okay.
On
I like satire.
The characters' ideas and travails, and it's also. Well, I'm not going to feed you anything else. It was also basically kind of the starring premiere of, I think, Veronica Lake. I think this is like one of her, this is like her big breakout. So
don't know who that is.
Actress. And she's like featured on the, like, it's like all the posters are like, Veronica Lake is on the take. Like, it makes it look like a big, like, sexy comedy. But it's like, that's not really what the movie is. But they had to sell it somehow. So knowing what you know now, are you a little more interested?
No.
But as always, Ecstasy of Influence, we're going in with open minds.
A clear head.
And a clear head. Man, there are all kinds of noises just bothering this intro.
That's
cats,
me, sorry.
Phone alarms. I just can't even anymore. Well, before we are interrupted by, I don't know, someone busting in the house with the flamethrower, we better start watching 1941's Sullivan's Travels.
Yay.
Come on.
The floor is vibrating.
All right, and we are back. I don't actually know where Ollie is, so I guess I'll just talk about Sullivan's Travels. I've been home for about an hour, and I think Ollie's home, but I yelled upstairs hello several times, and then the rest of the family came home, and I made dinner, and like Mitzi had a snack, and then Mitzi's mom and Mitzi went off to violin lessons, and I'm here, and the cat's running around, and I haven't heard hiding her hair from anyone upstairs, so I guess it's just me. If that's okay with everyone, I'll just talk about Sullivan's Travels, which we watched, 1941. Preston Sturges wrote and directed it, and what can you say about it? It's drama comedy film about being poor and art and our perception of poverty in popular culture and the way film portrays the downtrodden and the responsibility an artist has to experience the world before he or she creates art, and the hypocrisy on the part of artists and studios and commercialism and humor and slapstick. And I guess I should go see if Ollie's actually here in the house. Hold on one sec.
Are you actually in the middle of the show?
Yes, of course.
What?
You have to come join me. We're talking about Celluloid's Travels from 1941. I thought maybe you didn't hear me. Maybe you didn't hear me when I yelled hello a few times.
I didn't. There are you actually in the middle of the episode? Are we lying?
Yeah, well, yeah, we're about 5 minutes.
Dad.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it going? Do you remember what movie we're talking about?
Yes, Sullivan's Travels.
From 1941.
I was sleeping.
So
you could have come and knocked on my door.
So you were very hesitant about watching this movie. You were like, this movie sounds dull as dirt. And it is a movie. Okay, so what kind of movie is this?
It is a movie of giggles and sadness.
It's slapsticky in parts, but it's also like very deadly serious in places.
But it's not like leading up to the deadly seriousness. It's just suddenly really serious.
So I don't know anything about Preston Sturges. Like, I'm not familiar with his body of work. I just know about him from like Reputation. And apparently, so I guess the thing about Preston Sturges comedies, and he made like 10 or 11 like really famous ones, is they're very famous. He's just like, I'm just going to do all different kinds of genres. And I'm not, but not like blend them. I'm just going to like change what they, and like people were like, I love his movies because they're very random. Like, you don't know what's going
like
to
it
happen.
It goes from like a comedy to like a drama to like a thriller to like.
So this movie was, I guess, the one that was the first one where he went full on like melodrama and like social message, like all of a sudden, like, but it was very jarring.
Yeah.
Very jarring little film. So yeah, he worked with a lot of like really good people making this. But yeah, like there's like melodrama, there's farce, there's social commentary. There's, I guess, one thing I hadn't even occurred to me was, I guess like in the 1930s, prison films were really popular. I guess the movie I Was a Fugitive from a Chain Gang was like a big film. I Was a Fugitive from a Chain Gang, and a chain. You know what a chain gang is?
No.
Oh, where all the prisoners are chained together.
A chain gang.
It's called a chain gang.
Why is it? I thought like a fugitive, like from like they were running from a chain gang. I was really confused.
Well, this is easy. Slow down. Help me.
I was really confused.
I guess the last section of this movie is like a direct homage to that movie. I haven't seen I Was a Fugitive from a Chain Gang, so I don't know. But I from what I've read, like, if you were an audience member at the time, you would have picked up on a lot more references than we picked up on.
Why didn't you come get me?
Because I was sad. I was all alone.
It would take you like 2 seconds to walk up the stairs.
So Ollie, Veronica Lake's on the tape.
She was cute.
Was she?
Mm-hmm.
She was very different. So we've watched a lot of movies where like
every woman looks exactly the same.
Well, I was going to say where a guy picks up woman and she doesn't know him and then she dresses like a boy.
Like have we?
That happened,
have we really watched a lot of movies like that?
That happened in the Charlie Chaplin movie we watched. Like, was uh-huh. She, like, the little, like, the thing. There was another one we watched, though. There is another one. What is it? There was another one we watched where I was like, there just seems to be a lot of movies where, like, guy runs into woman, and they have, like, it must have been, like, a thing. Like, they have, like, a weird relationship, and you know they're going to, like, end up together, but also, like, maybe they shouldn't. I don't know. Like, Veronica Lake. That was the studio was so confused by this movie they didn't know how to sell it, So they just put a sexy picture of Veronica Lake on the poster. And the
was she also pregnant when they took that picture?
No, it was a painting.
Oh, okay.
It's a very abstract picture of her with her like hair falling over her face and just said, Veronica Lake's on the take, Sullivan's Travels. And you're like, oh, this must be a sexy comedy event. And that's not. I mean, there's not very, unless you really are attracted to hobos. there's all kinds of like, this movie's weird. Like it portrays like transience and homelessness and poverty like as cartoon, like a cartoonish and also like deadly horrific. And like you see him like was as like a traditional like tramp with like a stick and a bindle, like a cartoon like hobo. And then you see like squalor and people like eating garbage out of garbage cans. Like it's, and not like hilarious Heathcliff.
Every time you say hobo, it reminds me of that time where you said hobo in my mom's house. And she got really mad at you for saying hobo in front of me.
I don't think she, I think, did she get, was it, was I there? I thought, in my memory, you just came to my house one day and you were like, my mom says hobo is a bad word.
No, you were there and you said hobo and my mom was like, don't say hobo, it's offensive. And you were like, it's just a man who rides the trains. And I was really confused.
Yeah, I don't think of hobo as an, I mean, maybe people find it, I mean, I wouldn't call anyone a hobo now. I wouldn't be like, look at that hobo. But like a hobo is a specific like classification of like transient worker.
Mm-hmm.
Like a hobo rolled the rails. I mean, maybe that's unfair. I'm sure it did it stand for something?
I don't know. Homeless body.
Homeless boyfriend.
I thought you were just gonna say homeless boy.
And in a way, they're all homeless boyfriends. I mean, you know, if you wanted to.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about. Look at that train full of homeless boyfriends.
Who also happen to be women.
Oh, I don't know if hobo culture incorporated a lot of women. I think that was a whole other classification. They had their own like sign language.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hobo sign on our house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who painted it. Why is it so high up? I don't know. I think that's what I assume it is. It could have been the woman who lived here's kid who did it. I don't know. In any case.
No, it wasn't in the same style as the kids' paintings.
What is this movie about?
That's a complicated question.
So I guess what's the basic premise? Like what happens to start it all off?
A very rich man is like, I'm going to go pretend to be poor for a long time.
But why? Like what is he just
to
like,
see what I let me finish.
Okay.
To see what it's like to suffer so I can make this movie about it.
Okay. So yeah, so John Sullivan is like an extremely successful filmmaker, makes comedies, including, what was it? There was one that was Ants in the Pants, 1929 or something. They kept saying it like, people loved Ants in the Pants. And he makes frivolous films, and he wants to make this really, really, really serious movie based on a book called
Game of Thrones.
Called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes, that's definitely something I would remember.
Well, okay, so in 2000, a very, very, very successful, very famous movie came out by the Coen brothers called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Starring George Clooney and friends. And it was very funny and very, very well done. And the Coen brothers, whose style is obviously influenced by Preston Sturges, said that they wanted to make the movie that John Sullivan would have made if he had ended up making Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
A comedy?
Well, I guess their idea is that it couldn't have been anything. It couldn't have ended up as anything but a comedy. Because Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is a very raucous comedy in the style of a serious, like man discovering who he is type film. It's also very, very, very Preston Sturges-y. It's a road movie, and like it's very slapstick, and it's got a lot of like great characters. And I highly recommend it. Your mother's a big fan of it.
Good to know.
I just remember that. So he wants to make this movie called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So, but he gets told like you're not.
You don't know what suffering is.
Yeah.
Go away. Actually, no. Don't go away. Make a comedy.
Right, right. And he's like, no, I'm going to...
And like his like producers or whatever make up a bunch of lies.
About what?
About their own suffering.
Oh, that was right. I forgot about that part. Like, they tell him all these crazy stories. This is a Preston Sturges movie. So before we go on, the very beginning of the movie is a movie.
Oh, yeah.
and it's like two guys like fighting on a train, and it ends with them falling into the water off the train, and you actually went, the end, because as a joke, because it looked like the ending of a movie. And then what happened?
The end.
The end. The words "the end" appear on the screen, and you were like, oh, oh.
I was like, oh, great, it's the end of the movie. I guess we don't have to watch anymore.
And yeah, because it starts off with them watching a typical Hollywood film. So they made
a
this,
typical
like,
Hollywood flick.
Yep, it's a flicker film, and Sullivan is tired of it. Tired, tired, tired. And he wants to make a serious film. There's a quote here. He says, the dialogue is like very poppy, pop, 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 back and forth. And he says, this picture is an answer to communists. It shows we're awake and not dunking our heads in the sand like a bunch of ostriches. I want this picture to be a commentary on modern conditions, stark realism, the problems that confront the average man. And the guy in the room keeps going, but with a little sex. And he's like, yes, with a little sex, but I don't want to stress it. And the guy's always like, but with a little sex. He's like, yes, with a little sex, but a social commentary. And this whole scene is like 5 minutes long, and it's shot in one take, and they never stop talking. It's super fast.
It's good.
Yeah, it's really good. It has one of my favorite quotes, though, which is this film bombed in Pittsburgh. And Sullivan says, what do they know in Pittsburgh? And the other guy says, they know what they like. And he says, if they know what they like, they wouldn't live in Pittsburgh. Great line. Oh, yeah, so his movies are So Long, Sarong, Hey, Hey in the Hayloft, and Ants in Your Pants of 1939. It's just probably my favorite.
I wish those movies actually existed so we could watch all
of
them.
I think Ants in Your Pants of 1939 is supposed to be like Footlight Follies of 1939. Like, there were these movies that came out, they were basically just like variety shows on film. Like, it was just a bunch of dancing girls, a bunch of songs. They get famous people of the time to come out and sing a song and like do a dance and like a funny sketch and like some dancing girls. And it'd be like an hour and a half long, and then you'd go home.
It sounds like a more exciting version of a previous movie we watched.
What movie?
Called Fantasia.
Witches. Oh.
Witches.
The witch? Witch? Was it?
No, the witch. Paxson.
Yes.
The Witch is a completely different movie that is also very boring.
It's very wonderful. So, so he decides to like hit the road as a train. And he has a discussion though with his like, he's very rich, like you say, he's very rich. So he has a butler and like a handman. What do you call him? A hand guy? Not a hand
guy.
Not a handmaid. Like a.
A waiter.
But not a waiter. That's a person who brings you food. What is it called? Like a body.
Bodyguard?
Body man? No, like a body body boy. What is the word I'm looking for?
What do they do?
They like dress you.
A tailor.
No, that's a person who makes your clothes. Like a valet.
What is a valet?
I think it's a person who like dresses
you. I thought a valet
was
someone who took your things
and gets you ready
in
the morning.
Put you in your room.
I don't know. It's like a person like a groom boy, groomsman. No, that's not the right thing. I can't think what the word is. It's a person who's like, oh yes, here's my butler.
I think that's
here's
just
my
a servant.
And here's my something
maid?
Guy. No, he's just you wake up in the morning and he like, oh, very well, sir. And he like takes your nightgown off of you and puts on your suit for the day.
I think that's just a butler.
No, the butler is the one who like. But tells people what
who
to do.
Buttles?
I was gonna say that, but then I said it against it. Anyway, he's talking to these two guys, and like the butler has like strong opinions about
this.
He's like,
don't do this, it's wrong.
Yeah, but why is it wrong?
Because he's just like, because he's making like, I can't remember,
like basically because he's like exploiting
like these people.
Yeah, and it's like really just like, whoa, like it's a,
this is one of the scenes where it goes from haha funny to dead serious.
And it is like a wacky scene. He's like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna dress. He's trying on clothes to look, he's trying on costumes to look like a homeless guy, and you're like, ha ha ha. And then the butler's like, don't do this, like, you think this is gonna be funny, but trust me, these people are real people and they don't think this is funny. I know this, like, poverty is a terrible thing. And he's like, oh, I'm gonna do it anyway.
And then all of his like other guys come in and are like, don't do this, it's dangerous.
I guess it is valet. I just looked it up. It says valet, so
that doesn't seem right.
I think when you think valet, you think person who takes your car and parks it, but I
not
think
car.
Yeah,
I was thinking of,
well,
someone
like valet
like,
parking.
I was thinking of, I don't think about cars when I think about it. I was thinking of like someone who brings your bags up to your room in like a hotel or something.
That's a bellboy.
Bellboy, that's it.
Body boy.
Body boy.
That's your body boy. Anyway.
Is a body boy.
I was going to say bellman, but that's like the person who works the front desk.
The bellman.
The bellboy. So they decide that, okay, fine, he's going to be this guy walking America trying to learn. He keeps saying, how does he say it? It's like, I'm looking for trouble. And they're like, fine, we'll let you do this, but there's going to be someone like following you the whole time to make sure that you don't get hurt. So what do they set? What do they set up?
A giant metal death trap.
What is it though?
It's a car or a bus?
Like a
tank?
It's like an old, I don't even know what you call it, like a van. It's kind huge. It's
like,
very long.
It's more like a bus.
Yeah, but it's like not like rows of seats. It's like different rooms.
It's like those train cars.
Yeah, except one big bus. It's got like a kitchen and like a bath. And like,
how they managed to fit all of that in there is questionable.
It's crazy. I see right here. It's got a food, a kitchen. It's got a liquor cabinet. It's got a hot shower, and it's got all these like people who work for him. Like,
also a reporter.
Right. Because they're writing about it as he does it. Like they're telling the story.
I like the reporter. She's funny.
This is gonna be great for publicity. And so he's walking along, and he's furious that he's being followed. And then this scene happens. What is this scene? How does it happen?
So this little boy drives up.
Drives up in what?
In a makeshift tank?
It's like a roadster. He says he's training to be a tanker, but it's this like car, like a car he built. Like it's a car built by a child. In any case, what happens?
So Sullivan is like, yo, can I get a ride? And the kid's like, sure, come on in. And so they start driving, and he's like, how fast can this thing go? And the kid presses on the gas. And they just go,
which means?
Really, really fast.
They go super fast, like super fast. And so the van is trying to keep up with them. And this is where you get like this wacky, because as the van is racing by, like the poor cook is in the kitchen and all the food is falling on him. And they're being thrown left and right, and legs are going up in the air.
There's a weird reporter scene where, like, panties.
What about panties?
Like, there's a scene that's obviously meant to be, like, funny, but, like, her skirt, like, goes up.
Oh, right. You get these weird, like, almost revealing shots, but it's, like, 1941, so you're not going to, like, see, like.
Yeah.
And it's borderline, like, weird. And it's not, like, it's not the main thing in the shot, but it keeps happening, and you're like, this is kind of awkward and, like, weird.
But that's the point.
Plus, you get this, like, really weird. So, the cook is black, and he's very broadly stereotyped.
Yes.
You're like, ooh, this is, like, he's got the accent and the voice and the grin, and his face falls in the cake at one point, and he comes up with, like, hilarious. It's a black guy with white face on. And because of the way black people are portrayed later in the film, like much later in the film, when you're during the church scene and in the prison scene, I'm like, is Preston Sturges just doing this because he thinks it's funny, or is he
calling something out?
Is he setting it up because in this scene we're just calling back to all these like old Hollywood slapstick moments, and then at the end I'm going to show you what
people are like.
But people are like, and so everyone's a broad stereotype, including this like offensive character. I don't know. It could be.
It's the 40s. Who knows?
Who knows? He may have just been like hilarious. But I mean, the guy is very funny. Like he does a great job, like having things fall on him. Not to call out the actor for like he does a good job. And then a cop starts chasing them.
Yeah,
on a motorcycle. Because first he gets splashed by the car, and then the van drives by and it covers him completely in mud. I'm gonna say you were cracking up during the scene. Like you were like.
Okay, it's something about like the like camera in the scene that's just making everything go super super fast.
Right,
like just very very fast things like that are like obviously not actually going that fast make me laugh. And I don't know why.
So it's very well done. It's very goofy, and
there's this little boy driving this car.
Well, they end up like crashing, and they come to an agreement that like.
No, you have to remember the part where the boy gets in the cornfield.
What happens in the cornfield?
They like stop in a cornfield.
Right.
And like the guy is like, how are you going to get home? And the kid's like, eh.
Yeah. No, because they're really far away from where they were. And so this is like, this is all just prologue. Because then the movie really begins, which is he says, all right, we'll make a deal. You guys can still be there for me, but we'll meet in Las Vegas. And this is where his journey really begins. Sullivan's travels.
Journey.
His travels.
Sullivan's journey.
Which can be divided into three adventures, three journeys, three travels. And this is the first one. And
does Sullivan's Journey.
Which starts off with him getting a job as a sexy, sweaty, shirtless man chopping wood for an aging spinster or an aging widow.
Is she? I thought she was like the head of like the maids.
That's what I was. So I was confused about that too. I thought it was two housekeepers.
Yeah.
But then, reading up on it, apparently they're supposed to be sisters, and that painting is her dead husband. Like, I didn't pick up on that.
They were both wearing maid outfits, though.
I think they were just wearing like kind of supposed to be like sort of frumpy dowager outfits. Like, these are like aging dowagers. Like, the tall, thin sister is never married, so she lives with her sister who's a widow. And like, yeah, but I was confused. I thought that they were the housekeepers. But then I was like, well, then why is she sleeping in the nice bed? And why is there no one else in this house?
Well, I thought she said something about someone going away at some point and them having to keep the house or whatever.
Yeah, well, she's referred to as the country widow, Ms. Zeffy. So
she's an interesting character.
She's an interesting character. She's not in it for much. This is a little Warner Brothers cartoon we're going to see here. This is a scene where the portrait of her dead husband, I guess, anytime anything happens, it cuts back to the portrait and his face is different. Like, you don't actually see him moving.
No, well, they get taken to the movies first.
Right, and what happens to the movies?
A lot of gross things.
It's a gross experience. Because the aging widow is all into him. And she thinks he's going to stay there and chop wood, and she's going to get some of the man.
And he's like, hot? No. Well, I was mostly talking about, like, the people in the background, like all the yelling people in the movie theater. Like,
yeah, so they go and see, what, and I did not pick up on this. This is something that actually went over my head because this is all happening very fast. This movie's only an hour and a half long. They're going to the movie theater. It's showing three movies. So they're seeing three films, and the movies are called Beyond These Tears, The Valley of the Shadow, The Buzzard of Berlin, and also showing Swingo.
What?
So they're seeing like four features, including Swingo, I guess, and these are supposed to be the pretentious films that he wishes he were making. And how is the audience responding?
It's hard to tell.
Well, they're like, one kid is like blowing a whistle the whole time.
Who lets a kid bring a whistle into a movie theater?
And like, no one's paying attention, and they're like eating loudly and like coughing, and it's really gross. It's a bad experience. I didn't pick up on that. Like, I was mostly paying attention to like his interaction with the widow, who's like trying to hold his hand.
And he's like, no.
Yeah. So they get back to the house, and what happens? He escapes.
Well, like, she like locks him in his room.
Yeah.
Like, well, like, the interaction between her and the sister is like, he's totally into me, and the sister's like, no.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
And so he gets dressed back up in his hobo outfit. He makes a sheet rope, and he climbs out the window.
Well. Falls out the window.
He falls out the window.
And then runs away.
Right. And he ends up at a diner where he meets
a lovely lady
named
Lake.
But in the movie, she is named
Nothing.
Right. Another movie where a main character female does not have a name. We just saw it in Rebecca. This time it's this. She's only referred to in the credits as the girl. Is there any reason on earth you wouldn't give her a name?
Well, I mean, okay. So, typical Hollywood, they always have the girl.
That's actually said in the movie.
Like, so obviously she's supposed to be the stereotypical the girl.
Right.
And it makes sense, like, comedy-wise, to, like, not give her a name and just refer to her as the girl.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's why I think that is that.
I guess I can see that, but it doesn't make any sense unless you sit through the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're like, oh, haha, I get it.
Well, you don't really notice that she doesn't have a name. I didn't notice she didn't have a name until the credits. So I guess it doesn't really matter either way.
And so he's there, and he's, of course, pretending to be broke. Oh, he is broke, because he only had 10 cents on him, and he accidentally spent it.
No, he lost it.
Did he lose it?
Oh, yeah.
When he fell out of the window. Right. So what does she do?
She's like, here, have some food.
Yeah. And so they talk, and what do you find out about the girl?
She was an aspiring actress, but she was like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah. Nah. She's like, I gotta get out of here. All these people are creeps.
Right. And he's, you know, chatting with her, and he's like, you know, I used to know a bunch of Hollywood people before I became this homeless man. I can try to, like, set you up with a studio. let me go borrow my friend's car. So he goes to his place and he gets his own car and takes her on the road.
And then they get pulled over.
Oh, because he hitched a ride and accidentally ended back in Hollywood. He can't get away from Hollywood. He keeps trying to get out of Hollywood and he keeps getting taken back. So they take his car and they get pulled over and he's like, don't worry, don't worry.
It's my car.
Yeah, we can't get arrested. And then they get arrested. And they get bailed out. And
she's like, okay.
Yeah.
First of all, you're a liar.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, I want my money back.
Right. But then they end up hanging out at this. Oh, yeah. And so now they're hanging out at his mansion and at his swimming pool.
She shoves him in the swimming pool.
And then he pulls her in the swimming pool. And then the butler falls in the
swimming pool. No, then they get dried off. And then they're arguing again. And mm-hmm. she pushes him in the swimming pool, but he grabs her.
Yeah.
And then she accidentally knocks him to the butler who falls in his
right.
swimming
it's,
pool.
Everyone ends up in the swimming pool. It's a very classic. If there's a swimming pool in the scene, people are going to end up in the swimming pool.
Like the doctor.
Right. And so, so they're just kind of getting to know each other. And she doesn't think his idea has much merit. But she's also like, you don't know anything about finding trouble. But I've had a lot of experience with trouble.
So I'm coming with you.
So I'm coming with you.
And he's like, no, you're not. And she's like, yes, I am.
Yep. And
that continues for a while.
Right. And she finally convinces him.
She doesn't really convince him. She just says, yep, I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do to stop me.
Right. And because she said, her line is, you don't know anything about anything. You don't know how to get a meal. You don't know how to keep a secret. And you can't even stay out of town. I know 50 times as much about trouble as you ever will. And besides, you owe it to me. You sort of belong to me. When you're a hobo, I found you. And he's like, all right. And that's the end of that trip. And so we begin the second adventure. They go back on the road.
They get in some trouble.
She's dressed as a boy. She's his, as they say, she is his frail or his beezle. She calls him, she says, I'm your frail. And he's like, I thought they were called a beezle. And I'm like, what is happening? What is this planet? Am I in another world? I don't understand what's happening. I've never heard these expressions in my life.
Beezle.
A beezle. You're a beezle.
Do you know what they mean? Did you look it up?
Everything I looked up is just like, there's no like history of these words, really. It's like, I don't know. She says, I think they'll think I'm your frail. And the butler says, I believe it's called a beezle. Like, I believe you're lying out of your butler.
Stop buttling out of your butler.
Right. So they're hobos. She's dressed like a hobo boy.
Hoboy.
He's taking her to the Big Rock Candy Mountain.
No.
If you've ever heard the original lyrics of Big Rock Candy Mountain, you'll understand that horrific reference. Most people have only ever heard the version of Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Oh boy.
That was edited for children. The original Big Rock Candy Mountain is not fit for human consumption. Anyway.
I tiptoed through the tulips stuck in my head.
They decide to ride the rails.
And they fail.
And they get on the rails?
They fail.
How's that they fail?
They get on the train, and then they're so awkward that two homeless people actually get off the train
right.
just to not be around them.
What does he say? He's like, he sees like the two guys and he's like, what do you think about labor, like modern labor conditions? And they're like, whatever. And then he gets like hay fever or something.
He's very allergic to hay.
Yeah. And
he gets hay fever though, because he's sick for a while.
Oh yeah. Well, so they jump off the train and they end up at another diner, a food stand.
Yeah. And they get free food.
Uh-huh.
Because he's lost his money again.
Yeah. And they don't have a dime on him. And the guy who runs the place is like, here, just have some coffee and have some donuts. Oh, they have enough to buy her a coffee, I think.
Yeah.
And the guy overhears them talking and he gives them both coffee and then he treats them to donuts. And that kind of moves John Sullivan.
So he's like, I'm going to give you $500.
What does it say? I'm going to give you $500. Because outside their window is
the van.
The van. They just happen to land near the van. Oh, because they're in Vegas now. They didn't realize they were in Vegas. That's right. So he goes and they get cleaned up. He's really sick. And
but before he lays in bed, he goes to the van and gets a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Or he tells someone to go to the store to give him a bunch of money.
Right. And they give the guy $100 or whatever.
And they like, ruin the economy.
And he's like, it's Merry Christmas. And he like runs off. Yes, and they, as you keep saying, they ruin the local economy of Las Vegas by injecting $100 into Las Vegas.
Okay, listen. It's during like the like, is it, what time period does it take place in?
1941.
Okay, but it's, that's like, there's like hundreds of homeless people and like, they just gave this guy $100, which is a lot more than $100 now.
Yeah, but it is Vegas. Like, isn't that the point of Vegas? You put go and you just put money into the economy?
No.
Vegas works.
No.
In any case, he's super sick. And he has to, like, take time off. So that's...
what he does.
Kind of it. Oh, we left something out. His valet was very worried about him at the very beginning of the movie before he takes off. And so he makes a point of pointing out that in order to keep him safe, I don't know, he put John Sullivan's name tags, mm-hmm. he sewed them into the soles of his boots or his shoes.
Which got stolen.
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But he sewed them into the soles of his shoes. And it's handled so well, as such part of, so much part of a scene, there's so much going on, that it kind of happened and then I forgot about it. It's not like really shown to the audience very well, but... he's like, I'm going to go back out there. Nothing's going to stop me.
So they go together.
And she's like, well, I'm going with you. And he's
like, there's like a weird montage.
Yeah. So then the third and final section of the movie begins, which is...
begins with a montage.
Yeah, a long montage.
Of like their adventures as homeless people.
And this is where things get a little more like serious. Because this is, they're suddenly like in the... we've had wacky adventures. And now all of a sudden they're like, all right, we're doing this. And they go to soup kitchens. They are intentionally dressed like Charlie Chaplin and his one of his companions. They're surrounded by the homeless. Now, it was pointed out in a couple of things I read that this movie never gives a voice to any of the homeless. Like, no one ever speaks in this movie unless they are part of the middle class or upper middle class.
Or upper class in general.
Right. They're being followed, though, by a photographer who's constantly taking pictures of them. But they go to a soup kitchen. They have to wait online for food.
They have to wait online for food.
They do.
Online.
Sorry, I've been with Alana for so long, I picked up her New York-isms. They say online, not in line.
But when you just say they had to wait online for food.
Uh-huh.
Online.
Right.
The internet.
Right, that's what it sounds like, but it's a legitimate expression.
Not anymore.
It is in the East Coast. If you go to New York, everyone stands online.
Are we in the East Coast?
Anyway.
Anyway.
They go to a mission. They have to sleep like surrounded, like in like a pile of bodies.
Not bodies, people.
But people, but like just all crammed together in one room where on the wall it says, "Have you written yom to mother?" You remember that? Like a big painting. "Have you written home to mother?" And what happens while he's asleep?
His shoes get stolen.
And replaced with
some more shoes.
We've secretly replaced this man's shoes with shoes. Let's watch what happens. His shoes get stolen by another homeless guy. The shoes that are left behind are like a wreck.
Mm-hmm.
So they get this is the part that like we were both like, huh? And I didn't pick up on this. They get jobs. He wearing sandwich boards.
Yeah.
And his says, "Why look like a tramp? Moe's slightly damaged misfits at your own terms."
What does that mean?
I guess it's like slightly damaged clothing, like old clothing.
Oh.
But like if you go to the stores like TJ Maxx, they sell like stuff from big brands but that have been like sort of put together wrong. Yeah, so it's, "Why look like a tramp? Moe's slightly damaged misfits at your own terms." And then she's wearing a sign that says, "Moe unfair to union pants makers." And I didn't pick that up on that because I was so busy trying to read his sign. I was a little confused. But so they're labor versus management. Labor versus... it's just like the movie in the beginning they were watching. It's a social message, but it's right there in the movie. They're working at odds. Anyway.
They're working at odds together.
And then they find themselves having to actually scrape through garbage cans to eat. And that's when he's like...
nope.
And he calls an end to it. He's like, "We're done." He doesn't want to eat out of a garbage can. It's really weird. It's very abrupt. It's like in the middle of this long montage. And then you see them like picking through a garbage can and he's like, no. And that's kind of it. I mean, as far as like he's concerned, the movie sort of leads you to believe that it's wrapping up. Like he's done it. He's gone on his travels. He's seen the
his travel through one place.
But I mean, like he's seen poverty. He's lived in squalor. He's eaten at soup kitchens. He's
didn't go as far as eating out of a trash can.
He wouldn't go as far as eating out of a trash can.
Would any of us?
But even I was getting a little like, wow. I guess he did it. Like this is like, And the publicist, Mr. Jones, is talking about it, and he says, like, the greatest expedition of modern times. Almost the greatest sacrifice ever made by human man. He's the past master of poverty. He knows everything. Now, don't you worry. He's all washed up, except tonight, he's just going to go through for a quick tour. He's taking $1,000 in $5 bills, and he's going to hand them out to these tramps in gratitude for what they've done for him. Now, is that a story? Does that give you a lump in your throat, or does that give you a lump in your throat? And so he has this plan, where he's going to hand out $5 bills to all the homeless people in this homeless camp. We also find out that the girl is in love with him. Mm-hmm. And he's in love with the girl. But why can't they be together?
Because he's married.
Yeah.
Kind of.
They point this out. What's the arrangement with his wife?
They got married for some reason.
For tax reasons. He's like, my manager thought it'd be a good idea. So he married this woman he didn't even like know.
And now she's taking his money.
Right, they're separated. They don't live together. But it's introduced in the beginning. Like, you see him on the phone with her, and he obviously hates her. And she hates him. But through this whole thing, we're like, wasn't he married? Like, wasn't that his wife? Like, you could see him and the girl, like, growing closer, like, romantically interested in each other. But, yeah, so they introduce that as a, I guess, like, as a, just, like, a way for them not to get too close.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a reason for them not to. I know that when this movie came out and was being made, the censors were like, you cannot show them doing anything romantic. Like, because they are sleeping together on a train, they are not married, they're sleeping together warm, close to each other, like in all these homeless camps. You cannot show them kiss, you can't show them being intimate, because that would just be wrong. It would look wrong, they're not married. And so I guess maybe they introduced the fact that he has a wife just to say to the audience, like, he can't actually do anything. Like, within the morals of typical filmmaking. Like,
yeah,
that's
okay.
Sort of a signal of, like, this guy's, he's our hero. He's not going to, like, do anything. But also, he hates his wife, and it's not a real marriage. So he's like, I can't marry you. My wife won't give me a divorce. Like, she wants my money. I have to give her money, and that's it. Like, I'm stuck. So she's like, well, I guess I'll just go back to Chicago or wherever.
And he's like, okay, but wait until I hand out this money.
Yeah, and thus begins the unexpected fourth journey of Mr. Sullivan. And this is the part that I was like, what is happening in this movie all of a sudden? Because what happens in this movie all of a sudden?
The man who stole his shoes,
mm-hmm,
sees him with the money.
Yeah.
And is like, gotta get this guy.
Let's talk about the probably wasn't a smart idea to walk around flashing a wad of $1,000 in $5 bills like on the street anyway. Not to blame the victim, but it was a pretty stupid thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So he goes into a back alley for some reason.
Right.
And then gets attacked by this guy who knocks him on the head and throws him on a train and steals all his money.
Wait, he does what with him?
Throws him on a train.
Throws him onto a train. Drags him onto a train. Like, puts him on a boxcar.
No, chucks him on a train.
Yeah.
And steals his money and walks on the train tracks throwing money in the air.
Well, he trips and the money goes flying.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stops to collect it.
And then he gets hit by a train.
And he gets hit by a train. I was like, whoa, no. And as if this isn't bad enough.
He's wearing his shoes.
Whose shoes?
Sullivan's shoes.
This is the guy who stole Sullivan's shoes. Okay. Put that in the back of your pocket. Because Sullivan wakes up.
And he doesn't remember anything.
Yeah, and what I liked about this sequence is it's really disorienting. It's almost nausea-inducing. And it's fairly, for Hollywood, believable representation of someone who was just knocked unconscious and has a massive concussion. Because he's seeing, his vision is blurred, he is very disoriented, he's nauseated, he can barely walk, and this goes on for a while.
And then this guy is very aggressive towards him.
Yeah, the railroad bull.
And then he hits him.
With?
A rock.
In?
the face.
Ow. Yeah, he hits the bull in the face with a rock.
And gets arrested.
But he's kind of delirious when he does it. He doesn't know what's happening. He's like, where am I? What's going on? Who are you? And the guy, because, I mean, people who rode the rails were not treated well by the police in that area. He gets arrested, and what happens to him?
He goes to trial.
And?
He doesn't know what's happening.
It's really terrible. He's super disoriented. He doesn't know who he is.
He has really bad short-term memory.
Yeah. And the judge is like, you're getting 6 years of hard labor. And at this point, I'm watching, and I'm like, how hard is this labor going to be? Meanwhile,
she's waiting.
And a body is found on the tracks. And it's missing a face.
It's just smushed. All that's left is his feet.
Yeah. And they happen to be wearing
his shoes.
Yeah.
So everyone thinks he's dead.
Right. So this.
Because for some reason they thought he would just walk into the middle of a train track, throw his money everywhere.
Well, he's surrounded by money, and it's his shoes. And oh, because we forgot to mention that when he went to go give the money back, well, give the money to the homeless people, he dressed back up in his transient clothes. I don't know why he did that. I mean, I guess it had to just for the plot. But so, yeah. So they find this. They ask people to come identify the body. They're like, we think we may have found him. Can you identify the body? And they're like, nope. And I'm like, oh, what was it? Was it just like a pair of feet with shoes on and like a bunch of like mush? And they're like, can you identify this human-shaped pile of meat and bone?
No.
Nope. Check the shoes. So he's declared dead. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, he died. He was in an accident and he died. So this guy, so now he's on a chain gang.
But he remembers who he is.
And he slowly remembers, but.
No one's going to believe him.
Right. He's like, I'm a famous director. And they're like, sure you are. But let's talk about the guy who runs this
prison
camp. You
mean the terrible, terrible, terrible person?
Tell me about this terrible man.
He is awful.
Yeah.
I can't really remember much about him, but I remember him being awful.
You call him Mister. And as soon as he ends up in this work camp, S gets real. Like, he's the boss of the work camp is a sadist, and not in a, like, cartoonish way. But in a very terrifying way.
But, like, the second manager guy is fun.
That guy's a prisoner.
He's a prisoner? Why is he in, like, charge of, like, the prisoners?
He's, like, the prisoner who's been there for a long time, and he's just kind of, like, working for the
But he's also very nice.
Right. He's, like, this little piglet guy. He reminds me of Piglet.
Yeah.
He's, like, this tiny little, like, oh, sort of nervous man with like, a high voice who's secretly nice to him and kind of shows him the ropes. But, like, what kind of punishment do they mete out at one point?
Oh, the box.
Yeah, tell us about the box.
It's one of those very scary, very real things that happen to actual people.
Uh-huh.
Where they get put in this tiny box for however long they get put in there. That has an opening, but it's always closed. And it's just hot.
Yeah.
And gross.
What do they call it? Like the
sweat box?
The sweat box? Yeah. And it's like a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
It's just propped up. They're working in the heat, and it's just propped up out in the heat outside.
And they're not allowed to give him water.
Yeah, and the little guy like sneaks him water hidden in an oil can.
Mm-hmm.
And like throws them in his face just to cool him off. But and the little guy is like, "Hey, he's not that bad of a he's one of the nicer ones. Like he gave us chicken one Christmas or chicken on Thanksgiving and a turkey one Christmas. And he lets us go to the picture shows sometimes. And no one else lets us go to the picture shows." So, like, this guy has a reputation for being one of the nicer prison work bosses. We also see that it's black and white prisoners together.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a point of, like, showing them being shackled together, black to white, black to white. There's a point being made here. It's a little muddled. He's making a point a few times about since black people were especially like in pop culture just shown as kind of like living the lowest life in America, like having nothing. He's showing you how like the system can reduce anyone to the same level as black people were living at the time. And then this is really hammered home when they go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And where do they go to the movies?
A church.
A black church.
Mm-hmm. Run by really nice people.
Yeah. You see this black church, and the preacher is like, we've got guests today. So these are people who are less fortunate than us. And we're going to watch a movie today.
And that's saying something, because black people in the 40s were not treated well.
1941 in the South. This is coming off of like, this is like California, Southern California. So they sing a hymn. They sing Go Down Moses as the prisoners are let in chains. And I read this. This may be apocryphal, but what I read was there were black audiences who, when this movie came out, were kind of just like, oh my God. Like, this was the first time, even though it was being written by a white man and shown through a white man's filter and directed by a white man, this is the first time a white filmmaker had portrayed black culture in a non-derogatory, fairly just straightforward way. Like, here's a black church with black parishioners singing a hymn and just being a community. Like, there's no exaggeration. There was no, like, comedy out of it. It was basically a slice of life, very documentary style.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit that, like, watching the prisoners come in, I got a little choked up, like, watching this scene, because it was just like, you're watching this movie. It's very slapstick and very, like, melodramatic at times. And then you have this sort of, like, very real, just very, like, not silent because there's singing going on, but this is very just, like, just hear it. I don't know. I thought it was really well done.
Mm-hmm. I liked it.
And they watch a Pluto movie.
Why did they find it so funny?
I'm going to think, okay, so they watch a Mickey Mouse cartoon. It's a real Mickey Mouse cartoon about Pluto called Pluto something.
Gets slammed into a drawer and comes out flat.
It's a slapsticky Mickey Mouse film called, I have it right here, Playful Pluto. It's the first Pluto cartoon, like the first movie ever devoted entirely to Pluto. And this is a little like trivia. It's the Mickey Mouse cartoon that is shown as the first cartoon, as far as like animators are concerned. It's the first time in the history of animation that they achieved what many animators considered true emotional investment in an animated character. And that was Pluto in this cartoon. Like, people were actually like, you saw his emotions. You saw him like going through stuff facially and physically in this like cartoon. He's getting like, he's not getting beaten up because he's doing it to himself. He's trying to chase like a fly, but it's a very telling example. This is the cartoon they used. Anyway, what happens to the audience when they're watching Playful Pluto?
They all die. The end. No, they all start laughing.
Do they laugh a little or a lot?
A lot.
Give me an example of how they laugh.
No.
Give me an example of how they laugh. I'll do it. It gets loud.
Like, very fake as well.
Everyone's laughing. The warden is laughing. The prisoners are laughing.
It's very over-exaggerated.
I think it's supposed to be cathartic. Like, I think he's going... It does come across as somewhat, like, forced. Somewhat.
I didn't like it.
But,
it upset me.
But the point is, he's making, and yeah, this is one of those points where I was like, he didn't have to go this far out. Because then Sullivan starts laughing, even though he's literally like been beaten down. And then he's like, am I laughing? And he's like laughing. And this is where
I was completely straight faced the entire time.
This is though where I'm going to say that we kind of forgot to mention this. The whole reason Sullivan wants to make O Brother, Where Art Thou in the first place, and he says this throughout the movie, is that times are terrible. There's so many homeless people. People are dying in the streets. We're in the lead up to war. We've just come off the Great Depression. The world is in shambles. No one wants to see comedies. People need to see art that reflects the world as it is. And it's insulting to just show people comedies. No one wants to see that. People want to see reality. And he goes to this movie, and of course, everyone's laughing. The prisoners are laughing, and it's made really obvious, but it's like, oh, like,
people want to laugh.
They want to laugh. Like, they want
to know what the real world is, and they want to escape from that for some time.
Exactly. So he's declared dead, and
everyone's very sad.
You get this weird fourth wall breaky type thing where he's like, I got to get out of this prison. I got to get out of here. What this story needs is a plot twist. I need a plot twist. And he gets an idea.
Well, first he's like, I need to get myself in the papers.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get myself in the papers? And the guy's like, well, let me think. You could be famous. Do-do-do-do-do. Murderers get in the papers.
And he's like, hey.
And then he runs around screaming, I murdered John Sullivan.
Yeah. He confesses to his own murder. Because no one's caught the murderer of John Sullivan.
Even though he was run over by a train. Train.
It was the train. The train did it. Choo-choo! So he says, I want to confess to the murder of John Sullivan. Because, well, he says he's a murderer. Obviously, like, he's put in the paper for confessing.
And then the girl's like, well, time to go.
Ta-da!
Everyone gets very excited.
Since he was declared dead, his wife got remarried.
To the manager.
Yeah, to his manager. She's now guilty of, like, bigamy. And so she has to grant him the divorce, which means...
he can get married to other lady.
Yeah, he can get married to the girl, and he's free. And then they're like, now you can make O Brother, Where Art Thou?
And he's like, no.
And they're like, why?
People want comedies.
People want comedies. They don't want O Brother, Where Art Thou? He says, there's a lot to be said for making people laugh. Did you know that that's all some people have? It isn't much, but it's better than nothing in this cockeyed caravan. Boy. Body boy.
Oh boy.
And then you get to see all the people laughing again.
Yay.
All the laughing again. And this, okay, so some questions. He still assaulted that cop and got 6 years for it.
Well, but famous people always get away with things.
Okay.
That's one of the points that's made in the movie.
It's made in the movie. Not as a criticism, though. He's just like, I can get out of prison because famous people always get out of prison. And there's some things in this movie that he's making some points about society. What does John Sullivan learn in this movie?
Not to be poor.
Anything else?
That sometimes people just need a good laugh.
It's weird. So,
like, was he supposed to learn anything in this story?
I would hope so.
Why?
Because he's the protagonist.
When do protagonists ever learn anything?
It's the definition of comedy.
Okay, but, like, is this just strictly a comedy?
No, I don't think so. I think Preston Sturges was trying to make a point.
What if the point isn't what we think the point is?
What do you think the point is?
What if the point is rich people will never understand how poor people will live?
Okay, well, that's
like, they will never learn anything.
Here's my question. Okay.
Here's my question.
Preston Sturges is a director who is famous for making slapstick comedies, just like John Sullivan. John Sullivan wants to make a movie about poverty and hardship, but he doesn't have the experience. Preston Sturges was raised rich.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like, that's his story. He was raised rich. Life of luxury.
Maybe Preston Sturges wanted to make a movie about poverty.
Preston Sturges made a movie about poverty without having experienced anything. So did Preston Sturges really think you need that experience in order to make a movie about it? Or was the point of this movie that you can make a movie about this subject, but you have to kind of come at it from the side?
I don't know.
Maybe if you just, what do you think? Like, any ideas?
I'm not a rich white man.
Right.
And I don't know what is going on in their heads ever.
But I'm not asking you to, like, literally tell me what Preston Sturges was thinking, but if you were to analyze this film, like, from a critical perspective, like, what do you get out of it? Like, what do you walk away from it with?
A really funny race car scene. I didn't really get anything from the movie.
Did you not?
I was like, okay.
Just a little too random for you?
Well, like, it wasn't that it was too random. It was, to be honest, like, the last few scenes kind of ruined it for me.
Oh, yeah?
The laughing, it made me really uncomfortable. The, like, weird, like, it just made me really uncomfortable.
Yeah? Even, like, the end where he's, like, free?
Yeah.
How so? Like, what was that?
I don't know. It just seemed very, like, the white man wins again.
Yeah. No, I'm on board with that. He doesn't seem that...
Screw everyone else in that prison. Bye.
He doesn't seem that affected by his experience. He's like...
which is weird.
Right. He was subjected to horrific abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't come out as a crusader or a social, like, mover. He does not, like...
He just kind of throws his money around.
Yeah, and he gets out and he's like, I'm going to make comedies from now. I'm like, oh, I thought maybe you'd come out and be like, I'm not going to make Oh Brother Whore Art Thou. I'm going to champion for prison reform. Because these guys are being, like, tortured to death in the swamp. But again, I'm like, Preston Sturges was a smart filmmaker. I'm like, what is he...
I think what you like I said before, you will never like rich people never understand the like troubles of the poor.
Right.
No matter how like much they face, if you're raised rich, you don't know.
Right. And so Sturges could be saying, we shouldn't be trying to make these kind of films. Like, we should stick to comedies if that's all we know. Like leave the social messages to people who have experience in that world. And let's But he also made that kind of film. Like, he did it, and he did it, and he did it, and he did it in a weird way. In this, like, he keeps saying throughout the film, nobody wants to see this kind of movie. And then he'll show it to us. And I'm wondering, like, to me, there's a little bit of genius in that. Like, hey, everyone, don't we all agree that nobody wants to see this? And you watch, like, 5 minutes, you're like, wow, this is really well done. And he's like, right? Everyone hates that. And you're like, oh, wait, you keep showing it to me, but...
And then he gets good movie. Like, good job. Made a good movie.
Right. And I'm like, it's so meta. Like, it's on its, like, narrative, like... It's like this narrative Ouroboros. So this narrative, like, Mobius strip. And the movie's, like, plot keeps, like, winding back on itself. I'm like... It's not about the poor, but it is about the poor. But it's not about the filmmaking, but it is about filmmaking. It's a filmmaker making a film. It's a filmmaker making a film about a filmmaker making a film that he's not qualified to make. And the filmmaker making the film isn't qualified to make the film. The filmmaker making the film isn't qualified to make. Like, it just keeps going around in my head, and I can't wrap my head around it.
Moral of the story, if you don't understand something, don't try to make a movie about it.
But he did make a movie about it, and it's considered an American classic.
It's a
or wait, are you talking about Preston Sturges or John Sullivan?
I'll leave that up to the viewer's opinion. Listeners' interpretation.
Veronica Lake is cute, though. Mm-hmm. She's very good.
Don't say that. You're in a relationship.
Well, she is. She's years dead. I can say it about her. She's gray bones in a grave. I assume maybe she was cremated. I don't know. Is she dead? Veronica Lake.
Is Veronica Lake dead?
Let's see. Veronica Lodge?
One of her child is dead.
Veronica Mars? Nope. Veronica Lake.
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars, Veronica Lodge, Veronica Lake.
Veronica pregnant.
Veronica Lake died before I was born. She died in 1973.
From what?
She was 4'11".
She was as tall as my mom.
She was 50 years old. She died of hepatitis and acute renal failure. That's not fun at all.
I mean, I didn't what about her kid?
Whatever happened to her? Oh, yeah, so explain why we think there's a kid in her life.
Because she's pregnant when she's filming this movie. But she didn't tell anybody.
Right. Well, she didn't tell anyone until after she was cast.
Yeah, which is smart.
Yeah, and Preston Sturges got very angry at her, but she was already cast. And so what did they do?
They made her wear very flowy, big clothes.
Because not only was she pregnant, she was 6 months pregnant. And Edith Head, renowned costume designer, set to work designing costumes for her that were not distracting, but also hid her rapidly growing belly.
Which was amazing, because I had no idea she was pregnant.
Yep. If you know it and you're looking for it, you can be like, I can kind of see like where she's
Why don't you tell them what you thought about her being pregnant and all the slapstick?
She has to fall off a train at one point. She falls off a train into his arms, and I'm like, the baby. What's up with the baby? The baby was fine. They had a daughter. Her daughter is Elaine, was born in 1941. Her son, Anthony, was born in 1943. Oh, my goodness. Apparently, her son was born prematurely after she tripped on a lighting cable while filming a movie. So I guess. Oh, and then he died. This is not getting very. This is not a good. And then she and her husband divorced. But then she got remarried. Hooray.
And, what about, did her kids have any grandkids? Like, are there still, like, lakes running around? They all died.
She didn't see her children much. And then at years of drinking, she got cirrhosis of the liver, and then she died of hepatitis. Veronica Lake didn't have a happy
Nobody
life.
In Hollywood had a good happy life.
She was cremated, though, so she's not gray bones in the grave. Sorry, Veronica Lake.
You're very cute, though.
You were very good in this movie. She's very funny. She was great. I mean, I really enjoyed watching her in this. Her last movie, Flesh Feast. just in case you're wondering, it's true. Her last movie was called Flesh Feast. I don't know. She played Dr. Elaine Frederick. Oh. She was the lead.
This isn't important.
She played a mad scientist working on developing maggots that prefer human flesh, while her services are used to make a clone of Adolf Hitler.
Anyways.
Let's go back to back to Sullivan's Travels. Veronica Lake. Why are we talking about Veronica Lake? She was great.
She was pregnant.
She was great and pregnant. Very blonde. Very wonderful. This movie is chock-a-block with great character actors. Everyone did a great job. movie about a guy not who never lived through poverty, never went through hardship. I can think of a director who grew up in hardship and saw some stuff growing up.
I wonder who that is, Dad.
His name is Guillermo del Toro, and he makes movies.
Does he? I thought he didn't.
And he also loves Sullivan's Travels.
I can see why.
Why? Like, are there any, like, themes that you think, like, sit well with him, or the style?
The idea that he knows when to write something versus not write something. Like, he's very, like, he knows when he can write about things that he's experienced. And he knows when he can't write about someone else's struggles because he's never experienced it.
No, I think that's very fair. I think, you know, like, not to dive deep into his psychology, but I think he's an artist who's concerned with the legitimacy of art.
Mm-hmm.
And the not just like not drawing a hard line, but like questioning it, like what, you know, like the formation of art, and you know what stories we tell and what stories we're allowed to tell and choose to tell. I think he probably likes it because it's about an artist and like the struggles of creation. It's also funny and slap, and you know, we know he likes slapstick. We also know that Guillermo del Toro likes a little mood whiplash in his movies, like
just a little bit.
We know that all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, huh? Wait, huh? Like, so there's a Preston Sturges quality to a lot of his films. Like, even like Hellboy, where like, it's a monster movie. It's a romantic comedy. It's a buddy show.
It's a horror movie.
It's a horror movie. Or even like Shape of Water, where like, there's like suddenly a dance sequence and a musical sequence. And you're like, what? Wait, huh? Like, he understands there is a value in giving your audience an unexpected turn to sort of like recharge their mood. Plus, I think, you know, I think he appreciates this. I would appreciate the style. And
plus, like, he knows that, like, when something's too serious for too long, people just don't.
Yeah.
Care.
Yeah. Wait, it's a good he's good at also at like bringing home a social message without like beating you over the head with a social message, sort of sneaking in ironically like messages that are important to him. Oh, and also, obviously, Guillermo del Toro is very concerned with like the plight of the abused and the plight of the downtrodden and the plight of like the common person and making injustice and things like that. And
injustice.
You know, and I don't think Preston Sturges goes far enough in this movie about addressing any of that, but I think it's a thing that it's a topic
for the 40s.
For the 40s, similar in a lot of ways to like modern times. Mm-hmm. With the Chaplin movie we watched.
Yes.
Sort of a comedy, a wacky comedy that addresses these weird... I think modern times... I think I prefer modern times. I don't know.
I prefer modern times.
I think I may prefer that. Maybe just because I liked the relationship between the two leads in that one a little bit more than I like this one. But I don't know. Like, in a way, they're kind of a pair. They're kind of...
I didn't like this movie very much.
Did you not like this movie very much?
No.
Even though you did not like this movie very much, would you recommend people watch... Okay. Why would you recommend people watch it?
It's a good movie to watch.
Yeah?
It really like brings you back to reality.
It's a good conversation piece, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's some really funny scenes in it.
There are some really funny scenes in it. Kind of like modern times. Like,
I didn't really enjoy that movie, but there were some good parts in it.
But you can take like segments out. If you just want to show someone like a few of the scenes.
I just want to show somebody the car scene.
But again, it's a short movie. It's less than an hour and a half long. If you're looking to get a copy of, I really enjoyed it. Partly because I think it's a very difficult film. I think it's not clear. You have to kind of like, I've been chewing on it for a while. But if you're looking to get your hands on it, you can get there's a wonderful Criterion edition. It's totally like restored. The sound is great. There are many features. None of them are like essential features, but they are interesting. You learn a little about Preston. There's an interview with Preston Sturges' widow. There's a recording of Preston Sturges singing a song he wrote. I did not know this. Preston Sturges wrote over 100 songs in his life. He wrote songs for movies. He was like a song, in addition to being a writer and filmmaker, he was also a successful songwriter. So, you know, like, go.
No, don't play a song.
I'm not playing a song. Okay. I was just going to say, go Preston Sturges. You know, like, you had quite a... quite a career.
Go Preston Sturges. You were kind of a terrible person, but go you.
I don't know how terrible. Wait, huh? Was he a terrible person?
Like now.
Oh, well, like, you know, every guy who lived in the 1940s is a terrible person compared to now.
Yeah, that's why I call all of them terrible people.
Speaking of terrible people, Alfred Hitchcock. We've got another Hitchcock movie coming up. Hey, you like Rebecca. We've got another Hitchcock movie coming up. The 1941 movie. Our next movie will be Suspicion. It's, you know, not to tell you the plot or anything, but it involves a...
Suspicion?
It involves a man who is suspicious of his wife, or a wife who's suspicious of her husband.
He bite his wife's fingers off.
He did. No one bites anyone's fingers off. Thank the Lord. No one bit anyone's fingers off in Sullivan's Travels. No one bites anyone's... Actually, I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen Suspicion. This is going to be a first one for both of us.
What if someone bites someone's fingers off?
No one's going to bite anyone's fingers off. I would have heard if someone bit someone's fingers off. No one bites. If someone bites anyone's fingers off in Suspicion, I will eat my hat. I will cook it and eat it.
Instead of doing that, can you buy me some ice cream?
I will buy you some ice cream. Fun fact, our next movie is Suspicion. It has.
Wow, really?
It stars Joan Fontaine. The movie after that is Jane Eyre. It stars Joan Fontaine. So we've got some...
Joan Fontaine?
Yes. Maybe our next two episodes will be a little Fontaine themed. Maybe our next two episodes can be... No. It's Del Toro time. Fontaine.
What?
Good. It's what? Fun. It's like film Fontaine, but it's fun. It's Fontaine. Fontaine month. It'll be Fontaine month.
Why didn't
month.
You come get me?
So until then, Alfred Hitchcock Suspicion, I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.
Fontaine.